The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm happy to welcome to the show today, talk about historical fantasy and heritage, Desideria Mesa, author of Bindle Punk Bruja, on I Should Be Writing Season 18, Episode 59, I think.
Well, I should be writing.
Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a podcast for wannabe fiction writers where I try to get you to not quit. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. I've been doing this show since 2004. I've been a traditionally published writer since 2014. And my new book, Station Eternity, comes out in 4 days. Very exciting. But welcome to the show, Desi. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you. So excited to be here. It's so fun.
Yeah. I'm so glad. So when we get started, the first thing we talk about is basically accountability, because even though I'm pushing you guys to write, I want you to know what I'm up to. So I'm holding up my end of the bargain. I'm still working on a couple of pitches to send to my agent. So I've been doing a lot of, what do the cool kids call it, like 10,000 feet view writing, doing a lot of outlines and character sketches and the stuff I'm not really good at. So been puzzling through a lot of those. It's difficult for me, but I'm making myself do it because apparently when you do difficult things a lot, you get better at them. I hear this. I'm not sure it's true, but I hear that. Desi, do you want to tell us what you've been working on?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually been writing the sequel to Bindle Punk Bruja. So nice. We have the book 2 that I'm supposed to also turn in soon. And I too have been working on improving outlines and character profiles. I actually love that part of it. Mm-hmm. It's actually the sitting down and writing part, especially having a sequel and wanting it to be as good or better than the first book. That's really freaking me out. So yeah. I've got that. There's some other fantasy books I'm working on, a sci-fi trilogy, sci-fi nice. Comedy, all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to stick to one thing.
Sorry?
It's hard to stick to just one thing.
Yeah, it really is. Definitely. Let's see. We got, it's time for good news. I think we already had a good news early on. Oh, Jasmine says, my good news is I asked my library to order your new books and I got an email that they did 5 of them. Woo. And I've pre-ordered the signed one. Thank you, Jasmine. Yay.
Aww.
If you want to pre-order a signed one, they're going to have them at Flyleaf Books, where I'll be having my launch event if you happen to be in the, Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill area. You'd think I would have remembered to set up a button for that, but no. There we go.
buttons for everything here. Great.
I'm sorry?
There's buttons for everything here. It's
there really is. Yeah, but I have to program some of the buttons, though, unfortunately. I have not received any rejections for 2 weeks, and my submission grinder page is all red and orange, and I can't live like this. I'm so sorry, Under Pope. My good news is that BookBub featured one of my books, so for a day or two I get to see what it's like to be high up on those Amazon bestseller lists next to Christopher Paolini and George R. R. Martin, at least for a little bit. That's fantastic, Vale Who Bites Cats. That's great. Does the yay button work? We shall see. No, it does not. Thank you, yay button. There we go. I have to manually hit the yay button, which is okay.
Oh, okay. Well, it won't go away now. Don't want the yay button to go. I was gonna yay.
No. yeah, so do I have any good news? I don't think I have any, except for, you know, the book coming out, and we've got Station Eternity Live coming up on Saturday, which is terrifying me, but I'm very excited about it. We're going to be doing, I wrote a good part of the first part of the book to in audio drama form, and we're going to be performing it live on Twitch Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here. Very excited, kind of scared. I've got streamers Joey T. Badger and Urban Bohemian are going to be a big part of it. And more people who act with Joey on Blittle League, the actual play horror stream. And got, a couple of voiceover actors, a couple of old voices that you will have heard on my podcast if you were an old-time viewer. So that's what's going on with me. Nothing, no new news, but things are getting exciting. So yeah, one more moment for anybody who wants to share good news. Did I ask if you had good news or not, Desi? I'm going to ask if you have good news. If you don't, that's fine.
well, yeah, we just got on, now I'm forgetting what it's called. Oh, Booklist. So
oh, nice.
Booklist has done a starred review of the audio version, which has Frankie Corzo, who narrated Mexican Gothic. And
wow.
So it's really exciting for us both to kind of have that honor to have a starred review from Booklist that just recently came out. That was amazing.
That's great. Okay, well, we can get started. Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that I do have I've made some ad decisions, so people can, in theory, come in and immediately join the stream, but there will be an ad around the 30-minute mark. We're at 16 minutes now, so I will try to remember to take a break, but if I don't, I apologize, but I just need to remember, I gotta figure out the whole cadence and pacing of the show now that I want to think about taking a break. So anyway, let's get started. Desi, I'm so excited to have you here because when I heard about your book, I was just like, yes, yes, have this person on my show. Tell me about the book. It's awesome. So, gorgeous cover.
Thank you.
Awesome idea. Tell us about the, Bindlepunk Bruja.
Sure. well, Bindlepunk Bruja is loosely based on an old Mexican folktale about magic dirt. Kind of just earth magic, brujeria, which is witchcraft, but it's a Mexican witchcraft, which is has its own distinctions. It's historical, which I love to write as well. So it's 1925, so you have bootlegging, you've got magic, you've got witches. And my main character is a white passing Mexican daughter of immigrants who are living out of boxcars, which a lot of Mexican immigrants lived in Kansas City down by the river because it was difficult to find housing that would take them. So she's white passing. She's trying to pass as that she's not connected to this family or brujeria, but also not wanting to lose her identity or her family at the same time. And runs into a lot of things that are going on. The mob, the KKK, and just using her magic to try to get out of real sticky situations. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes on. And there's whiskey.
And there's whiskey! Yeah, I fell in love with the idea of speakeasies. I just think they're so subversive and interesting. Don't really like the tie-ins to the mob, so that one's not so good, but just the whole subversive bar in the back kind of thing is just always interested me. So you're from Kansas City, so that is where you have it set. Did Kansas City have a big Roaring Twenties position in history, I guess is what I'm asking?
It really did. And that's kind of what I found out in my research. So, I mean, originally I was tracking my family's journey from Mexico and it led up to Kansas City. And I'm like, well, if I'm gonna write this story, I want to find an interesting city. But as I continued to research, and it really started with the Mexican boxcar communities, it started there. And researching the 20s, Kansas City was making headlines in other newspapers at the time for being a city that just openly ignored prohibition. There were mm-hmm. open bars,
the whole city,
open brothels, the whole city. I mean, we had corrupt mayors, we had corrupt city councilmen. They were paying off cops, and it was just. And so Al Capone would travel between Chicago and here, running this huge syndicate of bootlegging business that everybody, you know, is obviously familiar with. But he hung out and partied here all the time. Big jazz city too.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's fascinating. So, you have the history, you have your own heritage sewn into it, closely. What was it like writing all of the bad parts? I'm pretty much a 100% escapist writer, and I'm always amazed at the strength of people who can write about, address a lot of the racism and sexism that's either historical or happening now in their fiction.
Really? First of all, when I started writing, I wasn't trying to send a message at all. I just happened to run into things that were so very familiar and, you know, eerily so, being 100 years ago, you know, the narrative in the newspapers and from women and from LGBTQ and from, you know, minorities, just the narrative was so much the same that mm-hmm. it shocked me. And I just, the parallels that it draws, those aren't made up a lot. You know, I've heard, you know, some comments about it being, you know, very progressive or woke or whatever, but this is the stuff that they were saying. I mean, it's just historically accurate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sorry if it sounds familiar to today, but we're still having these issues. So, I guess, to be honest, I set out to tell my family's story, and I love magic, and I love escapism as well. And mm-hmm. it just ended up drawing me into the reality because I chose, you know, a grounded setting. I don't think that I necessarily intended to or realized I was about to run into some real heavy stuff until I did.
Yeah. So, yeah. So tell us about the magic.
Couldn't be ignored.
Tell us about the magic involved.
Yeah, well, the magic is really a lot of research into brujeria, which is like a Mexican style witchcraft, which is going to be more of like an earth magic, more elemental, and spells and a lot of healing. There's a lot of healing, and then you've got curses, and then, you know, revoking of curses, and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, we're using elements from the earth, you know, in potions and spells and all that kind of stuff, speaking to the fates and, you know, the spirits around us and that kind of thing. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. We did have someone in chat saying he's working on, I think it was Underpope maybe, working on historical fantasy. So if you guys, if you or anybody else has questions about writing historical fantasy or anything, please put them in the chat. Would love to have you part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
So this is your debut book. What have the past couple of weeks been like? Because this came out September 13th or so?
Yes. Okay. It was September 13th. It was a Tuesday. I was at work. On my lunch break, I got to check what was going on. And yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic. Like a dream, absolute dream to walk into a Barnes and Noble, as I'm sure you have, and or into any bookstore, and my book's sitting there on the shelf, and I'm just sitting here staring at it, and my kids are like, "Mom, it's your book." I'm like, "Don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
It's there.
It might go away."
Yes, well, my youngest, she's 13, she's great, but she grabs the book and she's like, "Look at it." She's like, "Look at the map." I'm like, "You're gonna wrinkle it. No one will buy it. Put it back. I'll give you your own. I have a box of them at home." Just leave that there. And the lady that I asked her, you know, do you have this book on stock? And she doesn't even look, like, she doesn't realize, you know, that I'm asking for my own book. And I'm headed up the escalator, and she says, it's Desideria Mesa. I said, okay, thank you. I'll go try and find it. But it was great, because alphabetically, I'm right after Martin, mm-hmm. pretty close to it. Yeah. It was really great.
Nice.
I don't remember what the original question was, but it was, it's been a great 2 weeks. We had great publication reviews, first of all, from readers in Goodreads, but publications, Kansas City Star newspaper, Audible, Booklist, IndieNext, Library Reads, Writer's Digest.
Nice.
Just lots of great tour.com. Yeah, really cool stuff that we've gotten in BuzzFeed. A couple of BuzzFeed lists, too, so... I want to keep it going. It's like, I'm on a high every time it happens. I'm like, yes, okay. So.
Yes. It's harder to get than drugs, but it's better for you.
It really is.
My theory.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
Preemie says, what were your favorite resources while researching this book? I should say, Preemie also is working on a historical fantasy for the 60s plan. So what were your favorite resources?
Ooh, the 60s. That should be a lot of fun. Resources actually started like about 6 years ago when I did a research paper for college. So I used a college library and, you know, really learned how to research, you know, that way. And just articles. Go back to the articles that were written at the time. You're going to get an idea of the language that was used, of the way people viewed each other. And the social views, it's shocking sometimes. Like, did you just put that in the newspaper? Yes, they did. And didn't get called out because, you know, they didn't consider racist comments wrong or sexist or whatever. So you're going to find a lot of that stuff, of course, in the 60s, too. So look at old publications, watch old videos, movies, whatever you can, you're going to get great ideas from that, you know, as well as whatever you can, you're going to get researching history through history books and articles of that kind too.
Very cool. I'm trying to edit something on Twitch on the fly because that's totally professional.
Sorry. Washington Post.
How did you keep the fantastical elements from overwhelming the historical elements? That's a great question under Pope, because I was wondering how you mix those up as well. And I'll add on never mind. I'll have a follow-up question, but answer his first.
Sure. And just a little shout out to, we were in the Washington Post as well. Thank you for that shout out. So fantastical elements, I actually had the opposite problem. So when I was working with my publisher, it was overly historical and they wanted it to be more fantastical. So I remember the head editor at Harper Voyager sending in within the notes, he said, we want more sex, we want more violence, we want more magic. And I said, okay, no problem.
Oh my God.
Like, this is like walking through 1925, but we want more of this other, we really want more magic. So what's in the book is quite a bit I added too, and I'm an overwriter. So if you're going to ask me to add, I'm going to add it. Like, I mm-hmm. can't wait to add it. Because when it's your debut, you got to cut. You got to stay within these specific word counts and be very careful. And so I did, and I held back. But I was so happy once they got a hold of it, and they figured where I was going. They're like, yeah, okay, let's add to it. So honestly, I don't know how to answer that because I had the opposite problem. It's a add more fantastical elements fulfilled. So maybe Murr might have something a little more helpful.
Well, I don't do historical stuff. I'm always afraid of getting something wrong in the sense of I'm going to misuse a word or a word that wasn't used back then.
You have to research
worry about
every
that
word
kind of thing
use.
Way too much.
Yeah. Absolutely. You have to research every word. I think you could almost reframe the question, like, how do you keep fantastical elements, you know, still grounded and believable in the story? I think that's how you keep them from overwhelming historical elements, is just making sure that everything, that you're kind of filling plot holes and that it's believable. Mm-hmm. Just make it believable. You can have be out in outer space and make it believable.
Oh, you know? So what I wanted to add in a similar vein to Underpope's question was what do you how do you decide to change something when it comes to magic? I don't mean it quite like that. Did you have anything you wanted to change that wasn't historically at, you wanted to go in, I'm sorry, I keep thinking, well, Miranda did it with Hamilton, so, you know, we can all do it. But, you know, you wanted to massage the story a little bit to not be as historically accurate, but fit the narrative better. Did you use fantasy? Did you avoid that? Or did you just not go, did you not encounter that?
You know, anytime I tried to slide a couple of 1926, 27, or 28 songs or event references, my editing team was like, well, actually, so we stayed pretty accurate.
He did it in Hamilton. That should be everybody's defense. It worked in Hamilton.
I wanted to. I did. There is one reference. And I can't remember the mobster's name. Don't tell Harper. But there is one reference. And it's a mobster that was actually in the 30s that ended up going crazy and talking in a third person. You know, so like Desi's hungry. Desi wants to go to bed. Desi doesn't like this, you know, and he goes crazy. And I think he has syphilis or something. And so not to give anything away, but I did use say nods to that in the story. So there, it's from the 30s. But no, I tried to stay very historically accurate. That was something that was important to me, just to make it as real as possible. And then throw that magic in there and let it go.
Excellent. Well, you are also a poet. I've seen some of your poetry on Twitter and on your website. Do you get any published, or do you go mostly for self-pub for your direct fans?
Both. So my own, like on my website and on Twitter, and Instagram and, TikTok, I'll share whatever poetry. I love writing poetry. I do have some published, where is it at? I don't even have it near me, but it's by the same, it's a small publisher, but they do all like gothic stories, like really cool macabre type of horror. It's not like overly, I can't do like heavy horror, and it's by Quill and Crow, and they do really cool stuff. So they published a few of my poems. I thought that was kind of cool. I haven't pursued publication as much with poetry. I want to one day, but it's also on the list of things I should do, like sit-ups and eating well.
Sit-ups, eating well, submit poetry, those three things.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, there's a lot of poetry, a lot more poetry markets these days. I was just aware of it when I was looking at the Ignite Awards that Faya put out, and they have a best poem award. And
do they really?
Yeah, they do. And you know, these are poems that even the titles were so intriguing, I wanted to go look them all up. And I didn't realize that much poetry was happening in science fiction, especially, you know, by just, I don't know, fans speculative stuff. Sorry, lost my train of thought.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So Bindelpunk Brujas is the fourth book that I've written. I have a sci-fi trilogy that I queried for a long time, and I will get back to it. But it has poetry in it. Bindelpunk Bruja has poetry in it.
Nice.
Set out to do that. It just ends up in all of my work. So I hope people are cool with that, because it's there. It's probably going to always be there.
Well, I think if the editor didn't have you take it out, then you're...
Yeah, they didn't, thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a literary rap in my book that did not stay in there, I don't think. Pretty sure it did not make the final draft, so I'm kind of sad about that. But I've never been a poet, so I'm not too sad, but I was pretty amused at some of the turns of phrase I got to get people to rhyme something with John Milton stuff and Areopagitica and stuff, but Not a good point here. Jasmine wants to know, do you use beta readers / editors before you send it to the publisher?
I do. Absolutely, I do. I had a good team that I used consistently, friends that I used consistently, people who would be honest with me. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I let it go. Of course, this book went through my agent first. So she was the first professional eyes on it and really helped me a lot. And now I've kind of learned what the publisher is looking for with this story in particular, but I will continue to use beta readers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The editors, no.
Yeah. How did you decide to stop trying to sell the trilogy and move into this book, onto this book?
Because I was running out of people to query. I just knew, because the feedback from the agents actually is what convinced me. They were like, Desi, you're a debut author. This is a giant, giant trilogy. The first book was, you know, still 130,000 words. I couldn't get it under 130. And they said, I had agents that said, you can get it down to 110, send it to us. And I couldn't at that time. I might go back through and look, but I just couldn't. This big world building sci-fi. And so I said, okay, I've got to figure out another way to get into this business, to be a writer. I want to do this. And so I put it on the shelf. It is not dead. It's still there. It's calling to me all the time. So I decided to move on to another project because my goal first was to get my work published. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't the way I was going to be able to do my debut. I'll still get it published, but I needed to find something that was going to work for my debut.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you just said. And we're going to pivot a little bit to talking about advice to beginning writers. You said you made a specification that you still use beta readers, but not editors. And I think sometimes people don't know the difference between an editor or beta reader or workshop buddy or what can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Editors are typically people that you pay to look at content editing, for example, or they'll do line editing or, you know, different things like that. I didn't use those. One, at the time, I did not have the budget. And two, I felt like, you know, I kind of had a handle on some of that. And three, some of my friends were, you know, pretty good at helping me catch that. I just didn't have the funds at the time to have editors, you know, combing through it. But I did use beta readers, and I did use go-to workshops, and I did all kinds of things like that, going to workshops and learning and submitting my work and getting feedback all the time. I did pay even for agents to give feedback, because some of them have services to do that. It's totally up to you if you do that route, but it really did help me to figure out what a dynamic opener is. I'm still trying to figure it out, but it was helpful.
So what would you, if you could go back and do something different, what would you do as a debut?
I suppose I would have told myself a lot earlier, and it's a tough thing to swallow that, okay, when I wrote my first book, my very first book out of the trilogy, in my head and in my heart, it was the best thing I had ever written and that anyone has ever written. Okay. And
yes,
I just knew that that all the agents were going to get it and be in such awe that they were going to all just be calling and maybe even kind of quarreling amongst themselves. Who's going to get Desi? I was so confident in what I had written. It was the first thing I had written. So it was just like, oh, there's my first baby book. I would go back and I would say, Desi, because it took me a year to really go, you know what? I think I need to scrap this entire first chapter and possibly the ending and maybe a little bit of the middle. And you see where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
That, you know, to take the feedback, to not get so personally offended that someone has attacked my story. It's like, really listen to the feedback and learn from it and, you know, work to make your story the best that it can be. Because you might be skilled and have talent and all of that stuff, but you still have to hone it. You still have to grow it and be open to feedback. And that first year, I was just so offended by everything everyone said.
Oh, no.
It took me a while.
Yeah.
Took me a while.
Yeah, it is hard. I'm still waiting on my editorial letter for book two of my series, and I'm just like dreading it because I know that I know it's not perfect. That's the problem.
Never going to be.
I know, but it's like, even when you, it's like when you know it's broken, you know they're also going to come back to tell you it's broken in ways you didn't even realize. So Wire Duck just came in and says, the title sings, I love it. Follow up. This is where I'm told the title was imposed on you by a ruthless editor with one eye and steel teeth.
So, story.
Tell us about the title there, Jesse.
Well, who is asking? I'm looking for the question.
Oh, it's Wire Duck.
What does it say? Wire Duck. I can't find him. Oh. This is where told that the title was imposed on you by a ruthless editor with one eye. It still sounds like a pirate. I don't think that's accurate. Although I love pirates. No, the original title, and this is actually a good learning experience. Originally, I had looked up some 20s terms. So back in the 20s, it was completely acceptable to use the word gypsy, for example. Mm-hmm. So the original title was Bindlepunk Gypsy, and I, in my ignorance, did not know that it was becoming a term that is not, you know, it's derogatory. Yeah. And so that might have accounted for quite a few of the rejections at first, was just the title alone. But one of my agents, she saw past that, and it wasn't really the point of the book at all. And she's like, you know, Desi, you're writing about your own Mexican culture. Like, let's use a Spanish word, you know, let's change it to Profan. So I give props to my agent, actually, for like winning that out. And once we did, the whole book just opened up. I'm like, yes, that's really what this book is about. So no one forced it on me. It was a true moment of realization, again, being open to feedback and to, you know, not alienated readers. Mm-hmm. So.
Excellent. Underpope is convinced that that's how it's going to go for me whenever I finish a novel. I believe Underpope's referring to the, this is perfect, no one will have ever read anything this amazing before.
It's the best thing that anyone has ever, everyone stop right now and read this.
That's right.
That feeling is, it's a good feeling.
Yes, you know. It's heady. Jasmine says, do you use anyone to look for inconsistencies and or avoid pitfalls such as all the bad stuff happens to women? I see.
I'm trying to understand the last portion.
It's like it's like the trope of the black guy dies first in any horror movie. You know, it's a racist trope that just seems to happen over and over again. And so people watch for, you know. Or any queer person who finds love must then die kind of thing, and kind of have people look out for you to not do that.
Yeah, my agent and my editing team has been really good at looking for all of those things, and we did tackle some of it. Because mine is historical and in the era that it's written, there are some things that they just are historically accurate, and because, you know, I'm writing 1925, it's not Glittery Gatsby, it's the underbelly of society, it's mm-hmm. immigrants, it's LGBTQ, it's their experience in 1925. So there are some things there that aren't, they're not tropes, they're just the darn truth.
Yeah.
But we were careful, I think, and I was, you know, they were helping me to be careful and tasteful about how we presented some of those issues.
Excellent. So I think I'm at the end of my questions. If chat has any more, please let us know. And I want to give you a chance, Desi, to tell us if there's anything that we didn't ask or anything you wanted to talk about your book or about being a writer or a debut or the experience you've had in the past couple of weeks. Or since writing the book, actually. But, you know, once the book comes out, it's a completely different experience.
Since writing the book, yes. editing the book took longer than writing it. I'll tell you that right now. Once I got my publisher, I mean, not just waiting on publishing to get back to you, because they're working on a lot of projects, got a lot going on. But me going through and editing it with their notes, like when I first got those notes back, I was like, can I even write? Like, how? Like, makes you feel like that. I can't even write. But they're just pointing out, you know, things. And they were very clear, like, these are suggestions. These are what we see that maybe you want to address. And they were very good about, you know, I got to do it the way Desi does it. And it was fun for the most part. But I wrote that book in a couple of months and edited it for, like, I feel like 8.
Yeah.
It took such a long time. But it was fun up until the line editing phase. That's grueling. I hated that. I hated that. They're like these hanging, what do they call them? Dangling modifiers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. So I'm not schooled. I dropped out of high school twice. I went to one semester of college, and everything else I learned by researching myself and trial and error. And so some of the things that came back in editing were interesting to me. I was learning some of those things. Dangling modifiers is one of them. God, I hate
grammar and punctuation and all that. The more.
Yeah, I did okay with that. It was just more of like, just some of those things that.
Sentence structure?
I guess maybe. Yeah. So there's like, I don't know. I'd have to find an example. I just kept laughing when I'd find it eventually. Like arms doing things arms really can't do. And I didn't realize that's how I presented it.
Yeah.
So like, wow, that is a strange arm. So I had to learn that.
Oh, come on, guys, you can get away with saying that women's breasts do all sorts of things. So
they absolutely do. They're magical.
Yeah,
apparently.
So, you know, I think you should be able to get away with an arm doing something weird from now and then. I'm just saying.
So we fixed the magic systems was the other thing. They wanted to me to implement more magic, which meant to be consistent, I needed, in my opinion, I felt I needed a system. So I had to go develop one, and using Bruheria research made it fun and easy. I didn't even get to do it because I would have liked, just because of, you know, time and word count. But magic systems are fun. World building, it's all just so much fun.
Yeah.
But it takes time.
Well, it does not look like chat has any more questions, and I believe I am out. Where can we find you online? Desi Mesa, author of Bindlepunk Bruja.
I hang out mostly on Twitter. It's at Desideria Mesa. I'm also a little bit more present on Instagram and TikTok. Facebook, I wouldn't even look at that. You can if you want to. I try to keep it a little bit updated, but I don't go there much. And I do have my website, DesideriaMesa.com. It'll have all of the news articles on there if you want to look at the publication reviews and fun poetry, short stories, and all that fun stuff.
Excellent. And the link is in the chat, and the link will be in the show notes later on. And I am Mer Lafferty. This is I Should Be Writing. And I have a lot of stuff coming up in the next week. I have Station Eternity Live happening on October 1st, 7 p.m., twitch.tv/MightyMer. On Monday, I'm doing a launch event with Sherry Priest and Chuck Wendig on Ditch Diggers, and that is noon Eastern on Monday. And then Tuesday, we have the launch event. We're going to be doing a live I Should Be Writing here, and then we'll be doing, again, the launch event in Chapel Hill at, I think it starts at 5:30. And then on Wednesday, I collapse. So that's what's going on there for me. Thank you, Desi. Thank you, chat. And thank you guys listening later.
Thank you.
And you definitely should be writing. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks, and hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Doctor Who.